Mama, me. Munadiyah. Who am very foolish. Due to having no spiritual knowledge. Rabu, O my two lords. Ande, in blind. Tamasi, darkness. Magnasya, of one who is absorbed. Yanadipaha, the torchlight of knowledge. Udiryatam, let it be ignited. So translation, because you are great personalities, you can give me real knowledge. I am as foolish as a village animal, like a pig or dog, because I am merged in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. So you can repeat, because you are great personalities. You can give me real knowledge. I am as foolish as a village animal. Like a pig or dog. Because I am merged in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. The purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is the way to receive knowledge. One must submit oneself at the lotus feet of great personalities who can actually deliver transcendental knowledge. It is therefore said, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta gyasu shreya uttamam. One who is inquisitive to understand the highest goal and benefit of life must approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender unto him. Only one who is actually eager to receive knowledge and to eradicate the darkness of ignorance is eligible to approach a guru or spiritual master. The guru should not be approached for material benefits. One should not approach a guru just to cure some disease or receive some miraculous benefit. This is not the way to approach the guru. Tadviganartam. One should approach the guru to understand the transcendental science of spiritual life. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, there are many bogus gurus who display magic to their disciples, and many foolish disciples want to see such magic for material benefits. These disciples are not interested in pursuing spiritual life to save themselves from the darkness of ignorance. It is said, Om Agana Tumirandasya Gananjana Shilakkaya Chakshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness, ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This gives the definition of the guru. Everyone is in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, everyone needs to be enlightened with transcendental knowledge. One who enlightens his disciple and saves him from rotting in the darkness of ignorance in this material world is a true guru. So, tasmad yuvam gramya pashor mama muda dhya prabhu ande tamasi magnasya jnana deepa udiryatam. So, Om Ganatsimadandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So we have many examples of what Prabhupada calls bogus gurus. Of course, that's also a contradiction or an oxymoron to say a bogus guru. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada made that point, because if someone's a guru, then the guru. You got anyway, so it basically means someone's imitating a guru, making believe he's a guru. But the actual word guru means basically heavy with spiritual knowledge, and of course the ability to give someone Krishna consciousness, the bhakti lata bij. And while Prabhupada was preaching Krishna consciousness in America, there are of course many bogus gurus, or for lack of better words, who were making many, many followers. I mean, there was One, like Prabhupada talked here about showing some magic tricks. There's one who would charge his disciples to learn how to levitate. And they had pictures, or videos even, of people bouncing up on top of their bed and saying that they were levitating. I don't know if you remember that. And, you know, giving mantras, secret mantras, that there are only three or four different secret mantras, but you weren't allowed to share your mantra with anyone else. Yeah, there were just bija mantras from the Gayatri mantras. And there was other gurus who would undertake a vow of silence, saying that when they actually spoke, they would change the whole world. Of course, they never got to the point of speaking because they died before they began to speak. And there were others who wanted a Rolls Royce for every day of the year. I think they ended up with 350. They didn't quite make it to 365, and they died of AIDS or something like that, you know, some venereal disease or whatever. And I mean, it was just a whole potpourri. That's an interesting word. A whole potpourri of different gurus. There was another guru, didn't even come from India, this one. He came from Korea, and he claimed he was Jesus Christ. And so this is, I mean, it was really interesting. During the 1960s, it was just, you know, hard to find a bona fide guru. I was just listening to a video, one of Prabhupada's pastimes, and there was one lady this was in Indonesia, and she had come across so many gurus, and she didn't know whether Prabhupada was bona fide. And so Prabhupada came before her, and she was praying, "Krishna, just show me whether he's bona fide or not." And then she opened her eyes, and she saw a light coming from Prabhupada. Anyway. It was an interesting thing. So anyway, so we had so many. So it's actually bona fide to have bogus gurus. When do I say that? Because there's the whole history beginning with the original bogus guru, who was Shukracharya. Shukracharya means the guru who is the seminal guru, basically. And in India, it's actually quite common to have seminal gurus. Seminal guru means like a family guru or village guru or something like that. Even in the Jiva Dharma, you have these devotees, Vijay Kumar and Brajanath, they had been initiated by a family guru. And what happened is that they, again, took initiation from Babaji, one of the Babajis, Raghunath Das Babaji. And so the point is, actually, it's also stated that if one has initiation from a bogus guru, one needs to reject that immediately and take a mantra from a real guru. Of course, sometimes people outside of ISKCON have used that to try to steal people from the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, saying, you know, your guru is a kangaroo. You know, he's not a real guru. But, you know, actually, the guru is not supposed to be rejected. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that even, let's say, that you have a guru who's not, like, completely conversant in all the Vedic literatures, but he doesn't fall down and everything like that, he's not to be rejected, but you take instruction from other Siksha gurus like that. So the guru should not be rejected, except in the case when he's a non-devotee or he's preaching some really bogus apasiddhanta. Then the guru can be rejected. So, of course, as I mentioned before, the original bogus guru was Shukracharya. And Shukracharya, his preaching was, you know, to attack the devotees, basically. You know, instead of, you know, as you know from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, Vaishnava Seva is very important. You know, Jiva Doi, Vaishnava Seva, Namaruchi. I mean, this is actually the sadhana and sadhya of our Krishna consciousness, which is interesting. I mean, actually, that's how you know someone's preaching the truth, when the sadhya is the same as the sadhana. Sadhana means the practice, and sadhya means the goal. That's Krishna consciousness. Like chanting is a practice, and it's also the goal. When you reach Krishna consciousness, you're also chanting. It's not that in the spiritual world, they're chanting rock and roll songs instead of Hare Krishna. You know, they're actually, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, but they're chanting out of love. You know, we're chanting because we have to, you know, following the rules and regulations. Later you chant because of emotional, bhavata, you know, become attracted, raganuga, And then later on, you chant just out of love. You can't stop chanting. It's just so much love. People don't understand that about Krishna consciousness. It's actually the yoga of love. That's what Bhakti Yoga. And I was talking to someone yesterday. They said, you know, why are you so heavy with this particular individual who is an impersonalist? One of my disciples is an impersonalist. Anyway, that's Kali Yuga. So, and I explained because, you know, this is a symptom of love of Krishna. It's a symptom of bhava, not to say I'm bhava, but it's a symptom of emotion. Where if someone criticizes someone you love, you get angry with them. You don't care whether they're a disciple or whether they're whoever they are. You get angry with them. And just like I said, you know, so if you're talking to the person, I said, just like you have a little son. And I said, if I say that your son is deaf, dumb, blind, doesn't really exist. He's just a figment of your imagination. I mean, that's what the person is saying, you know, God doesn't really exist, you know, just a material manifestation for a short period of time. Or he's deaf, like as Prabhupada said, he's deaf, dumb, blind, whatever, you know, all the insults. You just get angry with me, because you love him. And if you love someone, you just get angry. I mean, just like I was listening yesterday to Jiva Dharma, and it said that, he's talking about the offense of considering the glories of the holy name to be imagination. You know, that's like saying, you know, Krishna's just an imagination. And the injunction, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if you come in touch with somebody like that, you're just supposed to just run into the Ganges or a river without changing your, you know, without even, you don't even have time to take your clothes and, you know, put on your swimsuit. Because he doesn't use the word swimsuit in the Jiva Dharma. Just jump in the Ganges immediately, take a bath, just to see someone. So that's actually what love is. That you just can't bear to hear. And then, but if someone's innocent, and then, you know, then I was talking to the person brought up someone else, another devotee, who doesn't understand the philosophy, but at least, you know, has some sentiment and loves Krishna. So that's fine. I can't get angry at something like that. Because it's an innocent person. So, you know, that's a Madhyamadikari. You're supposed to avoid people like that. So, let's get back to Shukracharya. He's quite an interesting chap. So, he advises something that's completely against the principles of bhakti to attack the devotees. Can you imagine your guru? You're sitting with your guru and he says, yes, your main service is to attack and kill the devotees. Huh? And the reason he's like that is because originally he was supposed to be appointed, you know, he was one of the candidates to be appointed as the priest of the demigods, and he didn't get his position. You know, it was either him or Brihaspati, they're running for election, I guess, or something. And then he didn't get elected. So he said, I can't have the ministry, then I'm going to oppose the ministry. That's envy. And so he had his disciples, and he just deals with them. Even when he advises them to worship Krishna, it's just to get powerful, Vishnu. It's just to get powerful. And then when Vishnu comes along and wants everything, he says, no, you know, don't give anything to this guy. Like in the case of, you know, Bali. If Bali was actually achieving, he achieved the heavenly planets. And Lord Vamana came, and Shukracharya said, no, you can't do that. And Shukracharya, of course, got his eye poked out as a result of that particular pastime. So so bogus gurus are something that's going to always be there. You know, so we have to be able to identify the real symptoms of the guru. But the main point of this particular verse, in addition to, you know, find a real guru, is, of course, Samitpani, Srochiam, Brahmanishtam. He's actually a servant of his spiritual master. Samitpani sometimes means bringing firewood or also approaching the guru with a straw in your teeth. That's a traditional Indian thing. You understand? You approach the guru, and your guru must also have that attitude towards his guru. He's a servant. That's traditional in India. You take some straw, put it in your teeth, and go before the guru. And, of course, offer dandavats. Dandavats means, you know, the eight parts of your body touching the ground. End of book. So, one must find a guru, samitpani, shrotriyam, brahmanishtam, who has heard from his spiritual master and is fixed and never falls down, always serving the spiritual master, is qualified, at least in the platform of nishta. I mean, that's the basic minimum quality, nishta, you know, steadiness in Krishna consciousness and steadiness throughout the rest of the day. It's not that he should just go to the morning program and be angry as hell at everybody the rest of the day. That's not nishta. Nishta is 24/7. So then you approach the guru, but in order to approach the guru, there has to be this humility, which is mentioned here. In order to have that humility in the material world, usually you have to bottom out, just like they have, you know, people have all these different problems like alcoholism and, addictions and things like that. And usually they say that one really has to just like really bottom out and realize that I'm not going anywhere, my life is hopeless, useless. And that's the proper moment that you can approach the guru. I mean, unless you're already Krishna conscious from past lifetimes. So here we find Chitraketu. He bottomed out. And of course, this is one of the ways, or as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the different mentalities that one has when they approach the Supreme Lord. Chaturvidha Vajanti Mam, you know, because you're in distress, because you want knowledge, because you're inquisitive, or because you want money. I mean, these are different things, but a distressed person is very interesting. He really dives at the lotus feet of the guru and the lotus feet of Krishna, practically more than anyone else. So this is also interesting for us too, that in preaching Krishna consciousness, of course, it's not that we just look for distressed people, but we look for people who are, let's say, not completely sure of what they want to do in life or in a transition period in life. That's why, you know, we preach in the universities too, because people are just like, you know, many of them are actually distressed too. You know, they don't want to go for the materialistic goals in life, and they're just confused, distressed, and they're really ripe candidates for Krishna consciousness. Another place where people would be ripe candidates is in the hospital. You know, many of the Christians, they understand that point, and they have these ministries, you know, hospital ministries and prison ministries. I mean, I used to do a lot of prison preaching, but what I found out is that after you preached in the prison, the people got out of prison, I sort of lost interest in it. I mean, I hate to be honest about it. But after they got out of prison, then bye-bye Krishna consciousness. Because it was an artificial situation where they were actually, you know, in distress. But as soon as they got the opportunity to enjoy so-called joy, then they forgot about Krishna consciousness. But so devotees, we should be reaching out to people in these particular situations. You know, people who have, you know, some change in life, have lost something. Not that we're simply like taking advantage in a materialistic way of people's situation. But these are people who can actually take Krishna consciousness very nicely. I mean, just like when my mother's husband passed away, you know, I reached out to her, talked to her about Krishna consciousness. She was very open to Krishna consciousness. Of course, sometimes that's called, you know, renunciation of the crematorium. Smarshana Vairagya. That, you know, when you get to the crematorium, they're all reading the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, in Fiji, they have an interesting thing that they chant during the ceremony, Ram Nam Satchahe. Ram Nam Satchahe means the name of Ram is the truth. And if you say it at any other time, they say, what are you saying that for? That's a funeral thing. You know, but actually Ram Nam Satchahe should be chanted all the time. You know, the name of Ram, the name of Krishna is the truth, the absolute truth. But somehow or other they get into religion at that particular juncture. So it's an ideal time to approach people. And if we want to maintain our Krishna consciousness, not that we have to put ourselves in a miserable condition all the time, but we have to come to the platform that's described by Queen Kunti. That's why I pulled out this Bhagavatam. Queen Kunti in the first canto, 8th chapter, text 26. It's actually a famous verse, and I wanted to read that in this particular context. I've quoted the verse many times before, and Prabhupada would often quote the verse. Janmaishwaryo Shuta Srivir, Edamana Madapuman, Naivarhat Yavivadatum Vai, Tuamakinshana Gotram. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Now, that doesn't mean we have to start to, you know, just give away all of our possessions. But as long as we have some, like, hope of enjoyment in this material world, then we're really not going to be able to chant the holy names purely. You know, as long as we maintain, you know, that's one of the offenses on chanting, maintaining material attachments. It's not offensive to have material attachments. You want to be clear about that. It's offensive to maintain them. You know, to increase them, maintain them. You know, just like if one has a sickness, a fever. You know, it's all right to have a fever, you know, but you have to get rid of it. You have to take the medicine. But if you just like try to increase the fever, oh, I have a fever, I'm going outside now and without my coat on, without, you know, it's cold. I'm going to take a bath in the river, you know, fever, you know. Then that's stupid. That's stupid. Anyway, so, enough of that. So that's what material exhaustion means. We have to be on the path of understanding. This is not going to give me happiness. Janmaishvarya Shrutasya Shibir. That's another verse, of course. Janmaishvarya Shrutasya, that's the beginning. So-called birth, respectability. You know, sometimes we're so concerned with what our family is going to think of us. You know, if I just get a little apartment, what will my family think of me? You know, supposed to be opulent in life. I was talking to some devotees about that yesterday. What others will think of us. Janma, you know, our family. Aishwarya, opulence. And then Shruta, Shivir. Of course, Prabhupada said we should want opulence for Krishna. We should want to use things just like we want to build a school here, you know. So we want money. Like Prabhupada said, they could take a picture of him like raking in the money for Krishna. Because it belongs to Krishna. But not for ourselves. Not we'd be, who's that, like Scrooge, the Christmas Carol, you know. Finally, he saw his karma in it. Isn't it? He saw the karma future, instead of, you know, Krishna's future. He saw a karma future, what he was going to have to suffer. And he got scared, and he became a very charitable person as a result of that. Anyway, so then Shruta, learning, and Shribir, beauty. You know, just like sometimes the ladies are so concerned with the beauty, with the earrings, and the nose rings, and the toe rings, and the whatever. And as long as one is thinking of these things, or taking shelter in these things, then it's cannot be approached, cannot approach Krishna. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So sincere doesn't mean that one shouldn't have those things, but one who is thinking that these are the goals. Sincere feeling means, Krishna, I'm yours. You know, just do with me, sarva dharmam purusha. Do with me whatever you want. You know, I'm your servant. Tell me what to do. I was thinking about this morning in regard to our relationship with our spiritual master, of course, my relationship with Prabhupada. You know, we should be praying, you know, that just guide me. Tell me what you want me to do. Because recently I've been watching some of these Prabhupada memory series. It's really interesting. And how Prabhupada is just like so dynamically preaching. You know, last night I was watching the Indonesia preaching. How Prabhupada just went there. And there was only one person he initiated, one girl he initiated in Indonesia. And just like dynamically preaching so many programs every day. And one interesting thing is Prabhupada yelled at some Mayavadi guru. It was just like, Prabhupada was in the room alone and the devotees were outside and they heard Prabhupada screaming. Screaming. And then Prabhupada just like became serious for the next 3 days. You know, instead of like his usual jovial smile, he was just very serious because he was just confronting this offender to Krishna. I mean, my bodies are offenders. We have to realize that. So we're supposed to approach the innocent people. Anyway, so the whole point is to just take this humble position like King Chitraketu is taking here. You know, I'm just as foolish as a village animal because I was just interested in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, increasing my progeny. You know, this is all I was interested in. And now somehow or other I've woken up, so please give me transcendental knowledge. So anyway, this is the state we should be in to actually become enlightened in Krishna consciousness. This is the teaching of Queen Kunti, of course. So any questions or comments? I'll leave time open for questions or comments. Yes, Purvaji.
I didn't quite get the name of that person who was a Scrooge and became charitable, and what was the point?
He was what?
Scrooge.
And that's Christmas Carol.
It's Christmas Carol. You don't remember that?
Yeah.
That's his name.
Scrooge. His name is Scrooge. Yeah, which has actually become a word in the English language.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, I forgot his first name, sorry. Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge. So if you say to someone in English, you're a Scrooge, that means they're cheap as anything. it's not a Shastric thing. Don't say this, Bir Krishnamara says from the Shastra, you know, in the Bhagavatam. Shri Scrooge Vacha, you know. I'm just bringing an example from, you know, something I read when I was young. Maybe you read that too.
Yeah, I saw the movie.
Yeah, so the movie. It was just like, you know, the ghost of Krishna past, the ghost of Krishna, no, Krishna's. Christmas, yeah, I'm too Krishna conscious here, but ghost of Christmas future. Because he was just real cheap with this Marley, right? Marley was the guy's name? Yeah, Marley, and he was just like, poor Marley didn't have enough to eat.
Didn't he have a little boy that was...
He had a little boy who was crippled. I forgot about it.
Bob Cratchit.
Yeah, Bob Cratchit. Anyway, so devotees shouldn't be like that.
But what's interesting, though, is that the principle is understood even by this, you know, Dickens, who is writing about these types of attitudes of harshness and selfishness lead nowhere but to hell.
Exactly. It's interesting. And then Shukracharya had those qualities, too. Was interesting, and he was supposedly a guru. Yeah.
I have a question. So we see like Narada Muni, Angara Muni, you know, they're traveling freely, and they're able to give spiritual advice, and also in a very neutral way because they're not dependent on anything. So how do we avoid the things that we've seen in the past when you have an institution? And you have people taking positions in an institution and have things that they want to accomplish, that devotees often feel that instead of being given spiritual knowledge, often the time they're put into circumstances that might not be the best for their own spiritual life in order to carry out some, you know, desire and also to avoid abuse of power. How do you keep the purity and the essence of Krishna consciousness?
Well, I mean, ISKCON also has like checks and balances too. We have, How do we avoid in ISKCON the abuse of power, basically? And so ISKCON, why did I take it out of the, that doesn't make sense. So, you know, we have these different, systems in ISKCON, like headed up by Braja Bihari, this whole system where if someone has a complaint, you know, it's not going to be, what is that called again?
ISKCON is all.
No, but there's a
ombudsman,
the ombuds system. The ombuds system. So if, you know, if it's not used against them, if someone has a complaint, abuse of power. And, you know, one should be very alert and not follow blindly. Prabhupada said blind following and absurd inquiries are to be condemned. You know, we have seen abuse of power in ISKCON. I mean, I was just talking to one devotee last night about it, how there was one guru with, you know, 100 guitars and, you know, and how many cars, you know, something like 25 cars or something like that. And he would just torture the devotees. They wouldn't get enough to eat. Just feed them cold prasadam like dogs. And, you know, and devotees, send devotees out in Sankirtan with shoes that opened up. Not, they weren't designed like that, but the sole just separated from the other part of the shoe. And then when some devotee tried to help these devotees, that devotee who tried to help the devotees got chastised. You know, why are you doing this? These people have to be trained up, you know, in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, there have to be systems in an institution. Even if there's not an institution, even if it's just one guru with his disciples, there's a tendency, you know, that, because power corrupts. Like Prabhupada said, if someone goes to Lanka, they become Ravana. And one of the great dangers in Krishna consciousness when one has a position, whether it's temple president or guru, whatever, is that it causes anartha to develop in the heart. That's a very dangerous thing. So we need checks and balances, and that's why we have the Society of Devotees. I mean, if people are isolated, then they don't have that check and balance. And usually in a abusive situation, you'll find isolation too. That's usually a common denominator of abusive situations. They'll tell you that everybody else is in Maya. I mean, let's talk about New Vrindavan, for example. I mean, I got abused at New Vrindavan. They beat me when I had 104 fever. Just to tell me the best way to overcome a fever was to get up out of bed, you know. And I'm traumatized from that day. I have a post-traumatic stress disorder. But I still remember it very clearly. So what they did is they had this philosophy that, you know, basically everyone else is in Maya other than us. You see, that's a common denominator in those abusive situations. They're not mixing with anyone else. It's called the closed organization. In organizational theory, it's called the closed organization. And there's something called doorkeepers or something, like gatekeepers. Gatekeepers is the sociological term. Where the gatekeepers don't allow any information to filter in or anything to get out. And that's how you can identify such a situation. You know, or like, you know, someone just tries to be a zonal guru or something like that. It's just, these are symptoms. So when, these should cause red flags to go up, you know, that there's something happening in such a situation. If someone says, you know, we're the real Krishna consciousness, everybody else. I mean, of course you can have some competition, like we say, in North Carolina, we want to become better than Alachua. But we don't go and criticize them and say, they're not real Krishna consciousness. We're the real Krishna consciousness in North Carolina. We're the only Krishna consciousness in the whole ISKCON. That we don't want to do. And that's a sign of abuse and exploitation when the leader does something like that, or the leaders do something like that. So I think if we have an open society, these things are avoided. I mean, institution can also avoid that. If the institution is an open institution. Of course, you don't want it too open. I mean, that's also theories, you know, institutional theory, that if your institution is too open, then you lose a sense of identity at that point. That anything goes, you know, anything goes. So it's a fine line between being too open and too closed. But that way, institutions can be very helpful to avoid exploitation. And right now, you know, the way ISKCON is, I mean, anybody can write to Brother Bihari and tell him, you know, Virupesh Maharaj is being exploitative. He's nasty, you know, he makes the poor devotees eat cookies every day, you know, whatever. And they're all thin. They look like they come from a concentration camp, you know.